Please join us on the Anna Bekoach.
Anna Bekoach, Gedula Yamincha, Tatil Sera,
Aleph Bet Gimel, Yutav Tzadi. Gematria 506 connects us to the phrase Ahavat Hinam, unconditional love, and to the name of God, Vav Shin Resh, dealing with memories and patterns. Kufrei Shayin, Sintet Nun. These six letters spell two Hebrew words, Kras Satan, Terap Satan. Or they can be rearranged to spell Sha'ar Katan, small gates, and reminds us to guard our gates, which is the entry point for the negative system. The letters of the month, the Kuf that created the constellation Pisces, and the Gimel that created the planet Tzedek, Jupiter.
Nagibor, Dorshe Yitzhuka,
Kevava, Shah, Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. Nun Gimel Dalet, Gematria 57, connects us to the Hebrew word Zan, which is Parnassah, or sustenance. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that helps take back the energy we've given to the negative system through our mistakes. Barchem
Tamarem Rachmeh
Tzachar
Tamim
Betet Reish Tzadi Tav Gimel. This connects us to the Sefirah of Netzach and its attribute of eternal victory. Chasin
Kadosh Perotu
Nahel
Adataka
Chet Kuf Bet Tet Nunayin. The sequence connects us to the Sefirah of Hod and its attribute of thankfulness and appreciation. Yahid Yud Gimelamet Pei Zayin Kuf. This sequence helps to speed the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium. Shavatenu
Kabbal, Shmatyatakenu,
Yoveha,
Tahalakot,
Shin Kufav, Tzadi Yud Taf. The first two letters, Shin and Kuf, connect us to the Gematria 400, which is connects us to perfection and completion. And the same, the four letters, the last four letters connect us to the phrase Ahavat Hinam, unconditional love, and the name of God, Vav Shin Resh. And we learn from this that the path to completion is by recognizing the patterns in our life where we've made the same mistakes over and over, and changing that action to be one that is a correct action. And also by injecting unconditional love in each step of the process. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper. Well, we're never going to qualify for the choir awards. But I'll tell you, it's good to hear everybody saying it. Let me read a verse from the Zohar. We're reading from from the Parsha of Shmini, which means the eighth, as in the eighth day. Verse 26. Et yedchem ki shivat v'shivat yamim yibae lei o shiva yamim yimale et yedchem mai ki shivat yamim yimale. Rabbi Elazar opened the discussion with the verse, and it came to pass on the eighth day. He asked, why does the scripture mention the eighth day? For it has a reference to the verse, and you shall not go out from the door of the tent of meeting for 7 days. For 7 days shall he consecrate you. He continues asking, why is it written 7 days and not in 7 days? And the question is straightforward. It's not something, it's not a question that people tend to realize when they're reading the Bible. But every word, every letter in the Bible has a message for us. And the difference between the seven and the eight is extremely significant. The seven refers to the physical world, the seven lower sephirot, which manifest in the physical world, seven continents, seven seas, seven colors in the rainbow, seven notes in music, 7 days of the week. All of the reasons and all of the connection to the number seven is telling us seven represents physicality. The eighth day is one above physicality. It's the connection to the spiritual world. A male child is circumcised on the eighth day of his life, because he needs to go through a Shabbat, at least those 7 days, to the eighth day to make that connection. He needs to have the balance that the Shabbat gives to each of us in order to withstand the process of the circumcision. Are there any questions?
No.
Okay, tonight's class is a little bit esoteric. So if you have difficulty with it, that's okay. But I will try and clarify it for you if you ask questions about it. The name of the class is Relativity. Now, I'm going to make some statements, and you all know I never want to prove anything to you. You need to prove this for yourself. But throughout history, whenever there were advances in science or advances in human interactions, human theories, the way people worked, it was originally always had to be revealed in the writings of the Kabbalists prior to it being revealed to the world. And relativity is no different. Albert Einstein published his theory of relativity. Actually, he published his specific theory of relativity in 1905. And Rabbi Ashlag wrote his treatise on relativity in 1903. Why did Rabbi Ashlag not get the credit for bringing relativity to the world? It's very clear that it isn't necessary for the Jewish people to be acknowledged this way. Although some have a desire for it, and Albert Einstein is Jewish, but he will tell you, you know, it just occurred to him. He received thoughts. And this is what some people call channeling. Some people call it guided. It's an intuitive acknowledgement of what you know to be true, but you can never prove it to someone else. Now, are you guys familiar with the Tree of Life, the 10 circles?
Right.
Evaristo, have you seen it?
I have seen the tree. You're probably not that much familiar, but I have seen the tree.
You have seen the tree.
Yeah.
How about you, Evelyn?
Yes, I've seen pictures of it.
Bob, do you have one?
I'll come up for one.
Isn't it in the book, The Power of Kabbalah?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. It is.
Yeah.
And I feel comfortable with that one because there's a lot of things in that culture that are not correct. And people don't, they see it and think it's correct and they don't pay attention to it. So I want to be clear.
It's fine. Bob is looking for the picture. Are you looking for the picture?
I'll look for it.
Okay. Essentially, I want you to take one of the circles. We're all going to look at the middle circle is Tiferet. So as you go through the tree at the top, it's Keter. Then the first circle on the right is Chachmah. The circle on the left is Binah. Then you drop down to three circles. One on the right is Chesed. One on the left is Gevurah. And one in the middle is Tiferet. That's the one I want to concentrate on just today. Tiferet gets translated as beauty, but it's essentially our chest area if we were talking about the human body. Now I want you to visualize that Tiferet, but now I want you to visualize a tree of life within the Tiferet. And now I want you to visualize another tree of life, 10 more circles, within the Tiferet that's in the Tiferet.
Okay. A multidimensional tree of life.
A multidimensional, because the tree of life is unending. It is infinite. The different levels, as an example, if we talk about various species of plants, you have roses and you have carnations and you have gardenias and so forth. Each of those relate to a sphera within a sphera within a sphera. In our soul, we mentioned that there are five parts of the soul when we talked about reincarnation. And we said there's all kinds of subcomponents within that. All of that relates to the tree of life. There's a tree of life within a tree of life within a tree of life. Is the Sfirat Tiferet, the top one, is it male or is it female? Is it sharing?
It's both.
Is it receiving?
The top one in the center?
Yeah.
Is all of the above, right?
Well, I'm asking, is it male or female?
It's both.
It's both male or female. All at the same time?
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Well, because it's in the center column, right? And it's there's no left and right up there. And it is at the highest, most spiritual plane, right?
Well, left and right means sharing and receiving at that level. So there is
right.
Left and right. There's sharing and there's receiving. Tiferet's in the middle. So let's transfer it. Let's go over to Chesed. Chesed is always sharing. Is it male or is it female?
Male.
Male is, female is always sharing. Male is always receiving for self. Wait a minute. I got that backwards.
Male is always sharing.
Female is always receiving for self alone, right?
When and female is always receiving, it's not necessarily for self alone. That's a,
okay.
That's, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Male is always sharing, female is always receiving. So if we go to Chesed on the right, are we sharing or are we receiving? Look at the chart. Look at the relationship between...
That's always sharing.
Okay.
On the right.
Now it's time to realize that what you're telling me is incorrect. So I want you to take those thoughts out of your minds. And I'm going to explain it to you. There is a relationship to the sphera above Chesed. And there is a relationship to the sphera below Chesed.
This is above Chesed and below Chesed.
What is above Chesed is Chachmah. What is above Chesed is actually Bina, all the way across from the other column.
Okay, we had a problem here because we couldn't find a tree of life with English on it until now.
Okay.
Okay, now I think.
So when we talk about is it male or is it female, is it sharing or is it receiving, there are times when each sephirah is sharing, is male. When it is giving to the sephirah below it, then it is male. When it is giving to the, when it is receiving from the sephirah above it, it is female.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when it's sharing, it's male.
When it's sharing, it's male, and that's below it. When it's receiving, it's looking up, and it's female. The relationship is always relative.
To what they are either receiving or sharing.
If it's a pipe, then it's constantly flowing. It's constantly receiving and it's constantly sharing. That's the nature of a pipe. If it's a glass, sometimes it's receiving and sometimes it's sharing. When you drink from it, you're drinking, it's sharing. When you pour the pot of coffee into it, it's receiving.
So the original question of the Kether is that since at the top it's always sharing, so it's male.
The Kether is always sharing, except it receives from the tree above it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? There is always a sharing and always a receiving. The tree above Kether is Malchut of the tree above it. Let me give you the relative relationship. You have a tree that grows a fruit, and in that fruit is another seed. The Malchut of Malchut is that seed that's in the fruit. If you take that fruit and just drop it on the ground, will it grow another tree?
Mm-hmm.
Since I know many of you are farmers, the answer is no, it won't.
But I knew the answer because you've told me that before.
Yeah. It will not grow another seed unless you take the seed out of the fruit and put it in the ground. Why is that? Well, the reason behind that is a very significant issue. But That's not what I want to go into today. What I wanted to explain, though, is the new Keter, the seed in the ground, comes from the Malchut of the previous tree. The new tree that grows from this seed is not the same tree. It's going to be the same species, but not the same tree. Relative to what are we discussing?
Well, we're talking. Oh, was that a question or a statement?
It was a statement. It's okay. Also a rhetorical question.
Okay. So I see the seed and the fruit as being the Kether and the Malkuth, respectively.
That is correct.
The seed is always sharing, and the fruit is a result of that sharing. Is that right? And there you're talking about the grandparent generation, our current generation, the grandchildren generation. Is that right?
That's good.
We have a picture behind the
tree of life.
Behind the computer, which tells the tree of life. That's what we are talking about.
Yeah, and I understood. I picked up on that. Okay. Now I'm changing discussion points now away from the tree of life to science today. And since two of you are somewhat knowledgeable about science, you're going to go through this very quickly with these questions.
Okay.
That'll be you too.
If the tree falls in the forest and there's nobody there to hear it, did the tree fall?
Well, we started with the assumption that the tree did fall in the forest, so.
Well, we can just a probability only. We can calculate that a percentage of trees are falling, okay, even if we are not present to witness them.
That's clever. I like that.
It is a clever application of the uncertainty principle. That is false.
That is false.
So let's understand why.
I'm not listening to you anymore, Abarascha.
That's okay. You're never going to grow like me.
Beautiful. What I'm trying to bring out, the tree is either fallen or growing. There's no in-between. The probability that the tree is growing or the tree is fallen may be calculated, but that's just a man's attempt to put a frame around his world. The tree is either growing or it's fallen. There's no in-between. There's no probability. Everything is certain. This world was created on a binary system. It's on or it's off. The Sephirah is sharing or it's receiving. It cannot be doing both at the same time because it's a vessel. If it's a pipe, as I said, it could be doing both. But that's a different kind of vessel. The Sephirah is a cup. It's a vessel. It can receive, and then it can share. But it can't do both at the same time. Now, is there time in the world of the Tree of Life?
Is there time in the world of the Tree of Life?
The first question you have to ask is, which tree of life am I asking about?
Well, I'm trying to understand your question. It's like, we need a beginning, right?
Well, the beginning is, the Torah says, Bereshit, in a beginning. We talked about it. It means there's always a continuous beginning.
So Well, at the beginning, there was no world.
There's a beginning. Now there's another beginning. Now there's another beginning. Now, is there a continuity between the beginnings? Is the memory of the Evaristo in World 2 the same as the memory in World 3? The same as the memory in World 4? Is there continuity or isn't there? These are difficult questions to answer because there's no true answer to it. There is an answer. The continuity is the creation of the Creator. So your memory can be changed, but since it's been changed by the Creator from World 3 to World 4, it's now the truth of your memory. The fact that in World 3 you had 16 kids instead of 4.
Oh, cool.
Has nothing to do with the reality of the tree. The reality now in World 4 is you have 4 kids. And therefore, that's truth. But is truth relative or is truth exact?
Truth relative.
Relative to what?
To my current situation, based on my current present.
Very good. Now we understand what the theory of relativity that Rabbi Ashlag has expressed really says. Einstein's specific theory of relativity and then his general theory of relativity did not go far enough. And according to modern physics, when they deal with the uncertainty principle, which says I cannot measure velocity and location at the same instant. Why can't I measure velocity and location at the same instant? Because as I measure, I affect the outcome. My consciousness of measuring changes the relationship. There is an eternal truth, and that eternal truth is the Creator. But relative to us, we can't know that eternal truth as long as we are limited by the physical body. And even if we're able to exclude and leave our body, as we do when we go to sleep, there's still an aspect of physicality that we are never able to get rid of as long as we live.
And what's that?
I'm sorry?
And what's that? I mean, if our body is completely rest, our mind is somewhere else, right?
No, our soul is somewhere else. Our mind is somewhere else. Our soul goes upstairs. It goes up to be regenerated, to be cleansed and healed and given new day's energy. But there is a string attached between our soul and our body that never breaks. If that string breaks, the soul cannot find its way back to the body. And it gets lost. And that's really, not generally, but there are some people who that have happened to. And where did their soul go? That, you know, they literally become ghosts. But they're not limited to the house to where they were killed in, God forbid. They go anywhere in the universe.
There are people who do a lot of that traveling that make each other promise to come back. Because there's a real hazard when you travel that way, right? No?
That's correct.
So they actually... Because I travel a lot of community. I mean, no, I shouldn't say that. I know a lot of people.
Because you know people who travel like that, and that they have learned that people don't come back because it's you know, it's really exciting and attractive to stay out there, but it's not what we're here to do. We were brought into this world to remove bread of shame, and staying out there doesn't remove bread of shame. But the soul does have to be renewed and re-energized every evening, or I think it's three. If the soul doesn't get sleep for 3 days, it'll die. But let's discuss relativity, because the important aspect is to understand that everything is relative. And when a Kabbalist is speaking of something, he's using a language called language of branches. He's saying a blade of grass. Those are the words he uses. Or he'll say a dish. Or he'll say a human being. And we have to know from what words he's using, where is he talking about? Is he talking about the human being in the physical world? Is he talking about the human being in the spiritual world? Or the human being in the spiritual world above that? Or the spiritual world above that? There are five spiritual worlds, four spiritual worlds and one physical world. And within each of those, there's an infinite number of layers of consciousness that separate from one aspect to another. We all have been on planes, I believe. We all have learned to fly. Why do you think the plane works? And please don't give me the explanation that the wind rates is different over the wings and it gives lift, because you're giving me a physical explanation and there is nothing in this world that happens because of a physical explanation. A plane flies because the people in that plane, the consciousness of the people in that plane, elevate the plane. Do we need to have a plane to do that?
No.
You don't. I'm correct. You don't need to have the plane to fly. Relative to the Earth, do we need to have a plane to fly in space? The answer there is, where are we going to get the oxygen we breathe? Or do we go there without taking our bodies? It's all relative. And we need to understand what relativity means. I am going to live 300 years plus. Anybody disagree with me?
Well, relative to what? The ants or the mice or?
No, I'm going to live 300 plus years in this body, in this physical world.
I've chosen not to argue that point with you.
Okay.
I accept it and I have seen so many strange things that I'm okay with you saying that.
Do you want to live 300 plus years, Bob?
I wish to do greater things for the glory of God, and I would be honored, and I would cherish the opportunity to be humble in His presence and His body for that long. So yes.
Okay. When a righteous person leaves this world, his body does not deteriorate. Nobody's arguing with me? Everybody accept that as truth?
Well, typically we human beings think that bodies rot. But we've also heard stories of everlasting bodies, right?
When I was born, we have a cemetery full of mummies. And the people do not decompose because the minerals on the ground. So now we have a huge museum of people that have never been claimed. Mummies,
right.
Regular citizens.
Are they still alive?
No, they are still alive, but they didn't decompose. I don't know what happened to the souls, but...
They didn't decompose?
No, they mummified.
That's not what Hanuk's talking about.
I'm talking about a body was put in the ground, and 400 years later it was dug up, and it looked warm to the touch. It didn't look. It was warm to the touch, and it looked fat and didn't have any emaciation from water loss. It was as if it had been put in the ground yesterday. And this is not one instance. It's many instances.
These were the ones during the Nazi era that were dug up?
That's one area. I'll give you one in America. But the people involved didn't understand what they were looking at. There was a civil rights leader by the name of Medgar Evers. And one night, in 1964, he was murdered. His whole life was about helping the black race improve its condition. He was a very sharing individual. He was murdered, and in that murder, in that dying for the sake of his people, he became a righteous soul, a righteous person. He was buried. 28 years later, his son approached what are the doctors that deal with the dead, do autopsy?
A forensic examiner?
Forensic doctor,
but it'll come to me. So this guy was a New York guy. He got himself into some documentaries, and I happened to be watching one of the documentaries one night, 2 a.m, because I couldn't sleep. And I heard him say he was hired by the son to exhume Medgar Evers' body, because they're doing some lawsuit against the city about liability and, you know, all the craziness. And the doctor described that he exhumed the body, and what he said on the TV show was, or in the documentary, was the body was warm to the touch and looked exactly as the picture that he was shown of what the man should look like based on 28 years earlier.
He was a medical examiner, and this was an actual video?
It was an actual video, yeah.
Of the examination?
Well, no, they wouldn't put that on TV. This was a documentary of his work. So mostly it was him describing it, but once in a while they'd show some gory details to get everybody excited. The essence of what he said was his left arm, his left hand, showed some signs of deterioration. Now, from what we know, what we've talked about in reincarnation, if a part of the body showed signs of deterioration, that part of the soul hadn't perfected itself. So that part of the soul has to come back and reincarnate and perfect itself. But every other part of his body and soul are perfect, are righteous. And that's what he has achieved in his life and through his death, in the manner of his death. Relative to what he was supposed to do in this world. We always have to talk in terms of relativity. And that is why, the reason that I'm giving this class, the reason that I'm talking about this, and why I'm saying to you, here is another tool in order to achieve your own correction, you have to understand that correction is also relative. It's relative to what you can do, what you are potentially able to do, and for what you're willing to do. If the tree falls in the forest and there is no human being to hear it, then it didn't fall. And if
later, why can't we just take it on faith that it did fall if someone said it fell and believe without seeing? I actually asked a question that he couldn't answer immediately. 5 points for Bob.
That is true. More than five.
First time. 5 seconds went by.
When you let's understand it, and I'm going to answer your question. When a human being walks through the forest and sees the tree fallen, that's when the tree fell. Why would I take it on faith that the tree fell? Why would I accept a level of consciousness called doubt? As we've discussed, faith is doubt. Some portion of doubt, not 100% doubt. I believe in God. I have faith God exists. Means I'm not certain. The tree is either fallen or it's living, it's standing. The reason that we don't accept it on faith is that there is no such thing as faith. There is only knowledge. There is only certainty. An electron goes around and around and around the nucleus. And sometimes it exists at one state of consciousness, and another time it exists at a higher state of consciousness, or a lower state of consciousness. How does it get from one location to the other, one shell in the atom to the other? Science doesn't know that. It just knows that it can only exist in these shells. But that's
quantum energy.
I'm sorry?
Quantized energy states.
Yes, quantum energy states. But they're just measuring the physicality of quantum level, quantum energy states. How does it go from one to the other? It disappears from this universe and reappears back in this universe. What did it do while it was away? Who knows? It exists. We see it. We know the truth relative to us. I'm going to live 300 plus years. People to say, as Bob said, I will trust that you're telling the truth, but I don't know for sure. But ultimately, it depends on my consciousness. If I choose to leave, then I choose to leave. And I won't live 300 plus years, but I have a potential to live that, to live 1,000 years. Why do we limit ourselves? Because people don't look around and see they have a choice.
We're conditioned already.
They're conditioned, exactly. And we need to break through those conditions on ourselves in order to achieve the maximum amount that we can achieve. We need to break through those patterns, those limitations. And that's the purpose of this class. To give you that understanding that you have the capability. If you remember the first class with the 9 dots, You have to go outside the box. Stop limiting yourself. This is the tool you're being offered today. How will you implement it? Now Bob's quiet.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
And how will you explain a blind man who's been born blind, the difference between one color and the other? Let's say for a blue from a yellow.
What determines blue and yellow?
Well, the physical world, the reflection of the photons or the wavelength from that particular object. But if the person doesn't have the...
Evaristo, no. What determines the difference between blue and yellow is someone's mind that interprets electrical impulses received from the retina.
A cat may see it as green instead of blue.
How would you explain it to someone who's blind? You could reach into his mind and learn, and eventually we will do that research and know how to stimulate that person to see blue and do another stimulation to see yellow, and now he will know the difference. Now, in today's technology, do I have that ability? I'm not an expert, so I'd probably say no.
Probably you do, but...
But again, understanding cause and effect is really the goal of relativity. What is cause and what is effect? If I throw a ball at a window, we know that the window starts to break before the ball gets there. Is the physical law that says I have to throw it with enough force to break through it not valid? I've said to you that nothing happens without a spiritual cause. Does that mean that all of the theories that scientists and mathematicians have developed for cause and effect on a physical level aren't valid? Of course they're valid. They work. Planes do fly by lift of the air over the wings. The real cause is not that physicality. It's the consciousness of the people. But we can't measure consciousness, and because we can't measure it, we don't consider it a cause.
So how did your source come to find out that the real cause for slain flying is consciousness? Was it just from being guided?
Essentially. There's a ritual in the Jewish religion that says if a man goes on a long trip, there's basically five events that if a man goes on a long trip and then returns, he must go and say this particular prayer at the next time he hears the Torah. What is this prayer doing? The Kabbalists say it's re-energizing him. He used energy by risking his life by being on a long distance when he went across the ocean, when he went across the desert, and there's three other places where he uses a particular energy that has to be replaced. And that's where we learn it from, because when planes were discovered, the rabbis said you have to do it then. If you go on a business trip or a plane trip, and when you land and return, you have to say this same prayer. That's where we learned it from. That application. But it's essentially cause and effect. We will not have to need the physical things as we get further. Why are there airplanes in this generation? This is going to blow your mind. 3 years ago, 5 years ago, it was a 100-year anniversary for the Kitty Hawk flight of airplanes, when the Wright brothers flew their airplane. So, somebody paid as part of the program to duplicate the flight. So they rebuilt the plane. Guess what happened?
It did not fly.
It did not fly. Exact same conditions. Why didn't it fly?
It didn't want it to.
It didn't want it as badly as the Wright brothers. It didn't have the same consciousness.
So this explains flying carpets, Ben.
Yes, it does.
I'm serious about that.
No, I am not.
You're not?
Flying carpets, are you serious?
Why do you think that they need a carpet? Why can't they fly without it?
They can.
Well,
let me ask a question a different way. What is the difference between witches, you know, old witches that you see, right, on movies, and their cauldron of magic elixir that they're boiling around, you know, and stirring in a pot with frog legs in there. What's the difference between that and your mother when she made chicken soup for you when you were sick?
Probably my mother is pretty and
but your mother put loving intention into that soup to heal.
Well, I imagine.
And it's the same thing that what our teacher is saying about the plane. It is the intention to make that thing fly.
Passion.
Yeah.
I grab that, but I am talking about now to jump into a flying carpet.
Same
it blows
thing.
Me off.
The same thing. How does a plane fly? The consciousness of the people that believe that the plane will elevate. When they invented the airplane, the people that wanted to...
Yeah, they put the intention and they plane flew, but... A carpet is just an analogy, right? A carpet will not fly, even with my greatest intention.
I'm saying I believe that they probably have pulled from intention, from magic.
You don't think people can do things and move things with their mind?
My father can do spoons with his mind.
The Evaristo, one of those 72 names, creates a shortening of the way, is the translation of the Hebrew phrase. What is the shortening of the way?
The shortening of the way?
Yeah, let me describe the picture. Describe the 400 years ago, 1700, 300 years ago, the Baal Shem Tov would say to his driver, pack up the horse and the wagon, and we're going for a trip. And the wagon driver would drive out of town, he would stop the wagon, he would turn around so he couldn't see where they were going, and they would arrive at a place 300 miles away in 10 minutes.
Interdimensional travel.
How did
That's where the UFOs come from.
Anyway. Interdimensional travel is the term, modern term for it. That technique has been known by the Kabbalists since the beginning of time, since Moses received the Torah.
And U.S. scientists have recreated that here in the U.S. And they've experimented and it's been highly documented. Interdimensional travel. But you're telling me that there's two modes of that incurring. One is entirely spiritual, right? And one is with the machine.
No. I'm saying that it's always with the consciousness, but it can only be done with the consciousness of that person.
Okay.
So the Baal Shem Tov and his generation could not imagine traveling without something physical.
But Einstein literally made the machine for us.
Correct. He gave us the concept to be able to go without the machine. And that's...
But I'm saying he actually made the machine, though, too.
What?
I'm saying he actually made the machine.
Well, his mathematics... I'm not sure where that they've created the machine to do it. Are you telling me they...
The Philadelphia experiment, right?
It wasn't made by Einstein. It was made by other physicists.
He was the main physicist on that project that inspired it.
Really? I didn't
know. That's where he went after he did relativity and worked on the A-bomb.
Okay. So he did the Philadelphia experiment, which was time travel. He was trying to prove he could travel time in the opposite direction.
Yeah. And what's valuable about that for us is to understand that it is possible. And if you go research that enough, go see the movie.
I am familiar with the Philadelphia experiment, but I thought it was fiction.
No, it wasn't fiction. It's just not explainable by science. And so because of that, they kind of call it top secret and hide from it and deal with it on that all of that different level.
I'm trying not to have to explain it.
Yeah. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to do in this class is expand your consciousness to stop limiting yourself.
I have a question on that before you continue. It's only
no.
Some part.
No. Answer no.
Okay, the answer is no.
You want to give me an opportunity to say no myself, Evelyn?
Go ahead.
She knows me.
I know what he's going to ask.
Okay, well, let him ask. I haven't
heard. Okay, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, is it a particular gene? Is a particular race? Is a particular physical condition that a person needs to possess, have, or be to be able to accomplish them?
To be accomplished what?
We're all created in
the shortening of the
wind. Be from relatively be in one place and another place and different places and different minds and situations and whatever, everything that you just said on your class.
Okay.
That person needs a gift.
No. The person needs to know that he can achieve that and then he will start to achieve it. Can you be in two places at once?
With my mind only.
If you can do so in your mind, then you can also learn to do it with your body. Science teaches that if I think that, now I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, if I think that we're going for a walk on the beach, is there a beach in San Jose close by?
Yes.
We're going to go for a walk on the beach tomorrow. All four of us are going to go walk on that beach tomorrow. Right at that instant that I've thought about walking on the beach, the footsteps are in the sand on the spiritual level of that world. The only thing I have to do is show up there tomorrow and walk on the beach to make the fulfillment of those footsteps.
That is correct.
Every time I think about being on that beach or being somewhere else, I am there. We've all experienced deja vus. We always all have experienced seeing somebody in a location that they couldn't be because we know they're somewhere else. But I swear I saw them. I even go to look for them and they run away from me. What is all of that about? Is at that instant, that person was thinking of you. and you were thinking of that person, and your consciousness combined into that visualization. Don't limit yourself any longer. We're searching for truth. Where do we want to go for that truth? In the Bible, in the book of Deuteronomy, Moses is giving his last speech over a 37-day period. And one of the statements he makes is, I can no longer go in and go out. He actually says, I'm 120 years old today and I can no longer go in and go out. Those are the words in the Torah, directly translated from the Hebrew. What does it mean, not going in and going out? Where did Moses go when he went up on Mount Sinai? The Midrash describes that his body, the lower half of his body, was on earth, and the upper half of his body was in heaven. He was half angel and half man. Where did he go? He could no longer go in and go out. Why couldn't he no longer go in and go out? Well, on one level, it's because we couldn't let him do it anymore. But the other level is he didn't want to anymore.
Is it painful?
Does that mean he does not want to come back, Hanok?
Correct. He doesn't want to come back.
He wants to stay in heaven,
painful,
right?
The answer is no. It's not painful.
Is it emotionally painful?
Is it disconcerting? Is it scary? Some people find it scary because they haven't been taught this class. They haven't been having their consciousness opened, so they no longer limit themselves. The Jewish burial custom is to, when the person is put into the ground, as soon as the people get home, they put covers over the mirrors. Everybody asks, why do we do this? And the rabbis say, we do it. They don't give you an explanation. But the Kabbalists give us an explanation. Spiritual entities do not show reflection because they don't bend light the same way that physical entities do. So in a mirror, if you look in a mirror, you don't see the other entities around you being reflected back because they're spiritual and not physical. Now you have a person who has died. He has left his body, but he sees himself as still himself. He still sees himself as his body, wearing the clothes he wore when he died.
How can that happen?
He walks into the house, he says hello to his wife, and his wife doesn't respond. She's crying. And he sees his relative, and he says hello, and the guy doesn't respond because he doesn't hear him. And he walks by a mirror, and he doesn't see himself. And he becomes frightened. He doesn't know what's going on. Nobody's talking to him. He can see them, they can't see him. And to save him that pain and shock, we cover the mirrors so that he can't see his reflection that isn't there. Does it sound crazy and absurd? Absolutely. But it's a custom that's been around for 5,000 years. Why is it being done? Because deep in our souls, we know this is true. We've been through this pain of death and reincarnation over and over again. We remember this at a level of our soul. And we don't like that feeling of shock and disconcertion I think I made that word up, but you know what I mean.
It's reckless, man.
You're a rebel.
That's the essence. That's really why this class is taught, because we need to know that there are no limits to the human being. There are no limits except what we put on ourselves.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Should we be scared of humans? Other humans.
Why would you be scared of anything? Are you a child of the Creator? Are you a child of the Creator?
Is
there anything in the universe the Creator didn't create?
No.
If the Creator created everything in the universe, what is there in the universe to be scared of?
A lot of humans with nothing up here. Wild animals, savage, that hurt other people.
Yes, and go read the words in the Torah talking about wild beasts and pestilence in the plagues of Egypt. And then read them as speaking about human beings that do not have any consciousness, that are totally reactive. It's not a wild beast, it's a human being on a lower level of consciousness. It's a code word, wild beast, means a human being who has a lower level of consciousness. Should you be afraid of that person or that group of people? Or should you help them elevate their consciousness to understand?
I don't know, just tell me.
Every situation is relative, Evaristo. Tell me the situation, describe it in complete detail. Tell me where you were with those people in your previous lifetimes. What was the mistake you made with them or they made with you? Give me all of that information and then you'll know the answer without me having to tell you. It's always relative. Look for the...
Well, I see them everywhere. The movie Sixth Sense, I see them
really?
Everywhere.
Do you really? Are you just joking?
No, I see them. I feel... No, I don't see them. I feel them everywhere.
Feel what?
Mean, savage, wild.
You mean humans?
Humans.
Okay.
But Evaristo... In order for you to feel them, you have to have that in you. And now you know why you feel them. So that they can be your mirror to show you what you need to correct. So why would you fear them? You would thank them for being your mirror.
That's one of my new hobbies, Adok, is to give me more.
Right.
And it actually, I'm finding it working. It does work. When I say give me more, it's like I turn and face and acknowledge and I take responsibility that is part of my nature and I choose not to focus on it. And then I'm headed down the road, I hope, where I only focus on the positive, and then I only see the positive, I only see the light. And I don't care about the dark.
No? But the other aspect of that dark is still within you. The difference is, at some point you will learn to take it out of you, look at it, see that it's ugly and I don't like it and I want to throw it away, and literally throw it out of you and destroy it.
So how do I do that? With some special Kabbalistic tweezers?
No, with your consciousness, with your choice. When you look at your character trait, when you look at another human being hurting another human being, Why did you hear it? You drive by a car accident, God forbid. Why did you drive by it? You twisted metal. You see the pain of the guy bleeding on the ground before the ambulance got there. Why do you see this?
So that I could go through the experience of the anguish to refine myself.
Exactly.
It was all scripted the night before, right?
It was scripted long before the night before, but it's scripted in the last night too. The script is general when it's talking about a year. It's specific when it's talking about a minute. And it's general to specific in anywhere you talk about frames of time as they change as you get closer to an event. Remember, you're just playing out the movie, except for your choice of restriction. I think we put Evelyn to sleep tonight.
No, I'm not asleep. I'm just thinking.
Baruch Hashem.
No, I needed to hear that. I needed to hear these words.
Yeah, about limiting.
Yeah, actually, you crossed the line on this class.
I hope so. In what way did I cross the line?
Well, from
your comfort zone?
From my comfort zone to jump into it.
I actually needed to hear this. This is exactly what I needed to hear today, and I appreciate you sharing this information with us. And this is exactly what me and my dad were talking about on our way here. It's kind of like this whole conversation, I was kind of explaining what, through your perspective, more like, and he's still putting his perspective, but it's kind of like...
We're arguing about what you are talking about.
On the way here.
On the way
here. And so you saying this is like, it's great.
Yeah,
it's great.
It makes me feel bad because you guys win and I lose.
No,
I'm just kidding. No, it is a compliment of what we are trying to, I am, me, myself, because she's like, with the same perspective as you. I am the one who needs to understand it, absorb it, grow with it, learn or whatever, then, and see if I can advance, because I am blocked somewhere. And I have to find out where and why.
Ask a dream question. I've described...
No, I'm dreaming. No, I dream every day, so. No, I am just kidding.
You get your answer in a dream.
Dream questions, before you go to sleep, you say the Ana Bekoah, and you ask out loud to the universe a specific, detailed question.
Okay.
And either you will get your answer that night in the dream, or you will get it the next day, or the day after. And if you get it, you will get it as a sign. And at the moment you see the sign, the event that's called a sign, you will have a thought, that is my answer. A lot of times people get these answers and they don't like them, and so they ignore them.
Mm.
But if you ask a dream question, you will always get an answer. So be sure you want to know the answer before you ask it. But a dream question will always be answered. If you don't get an answer that first night, ask the exact same dream question the next night and the third night until you receive your answer.
But if you get the answer and you don't like it, you can still change it, right? You can change...
What does it mean that you didn't like it? It means that you know how to control, to rule the universe better than the creator, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Who did you ask the question to? You ask the question to the Creator, to your higher self, and ultimately to the Creator. And the question was answered in a way that you don't like. But it doesn't mean that it's not the best thing for you. It just means you don't like it. It's not what you want. But what you're really saying when you say that is, I can rule this universe better than the Creator, God forbid. That is what you're saying.
No, I mean, you can improve it to prevent the block. The block, right?
Well, or what is the question you would suggest your dad should ask?
Why do I put limitations? Why am I continuously putting limitations on myself?
Okay, that's not a good question to ask, but taking that as a starting point, the question should be, what is the specific blockage that causes me to limit myself? What am I lacking that causes me to limit myself?
I got an answer.
Okay.
It just popped out of my head. For me, everything is physical. I'm still not believing that everything has to be spiritual before. And I am limited by the physical world that I know.
And that's what I'm trying to shock you out of, which is why when you said to me, I've crossed the line, I said, Baruch Hashem. I'm trying to shock you out of it, not just you, but all of my students, because we all have those limitations. Bob will say he's not limited, but he limits himself to how far he's willing to travel in his esoteric travels.
I do. Based upon the experiences of multiple people.
They've told him not to travel as far because of their experiences. And maybe that's correct, but you're not experiencing it yourself, so you're limiting yourself. What is a personal experience of the Creator, which is what I promised you, you would learn from these tools? For some people, it's literally reading the Torah, reading the Psalms, reading the verses. That is the personal experience of the Creator. The Creator wrote them. The Creator had a person write them. He's talking to us through those verses. That's the extent the person wants. Somebody else wants to stand face to face to the Creator and ask questions. Why do you do this? Why is there pain in the world? How can I avoid pain for other people in the world? Whatever, everybody has a different aspect of desire, which is relative to their process, of correction, which is what the class next week will be about, correction. How do you find out what your correction is? But you first had to have the class of relativity to understand that you need to not limit yourself when you search for your correction.
Could you tell us more about that, teacher? We're both talking at once. Go ahead.
Next week I will answer more about what is your correction. Where do you go to find your correction? We've had individual conversations about it, but this is a, you know, more general framework for you to understand it. Very specific. You know, one place is to go to that website, which I think you went to and got your personal correction. What mistakes you made last lifetime and what life lessons you are here to learn in this lifetime. That's a beginning. Looking at your personal verses that are talking to you, the Creator is talking to you. But I don't understand them. It's telling, you know, it's talking about something that doesn't apply to me. You have to understand that those are code words that do apply to you. You just don't understand the definition of those code words. And you need to search. You need to ask a dream question. I've read this psalm. This is what it says. This doesn't make sense to me. What is the meaning? Ask dream questions. There's no limit to what answers you will get as long as you ask the question. What is the cause, the question or the answer?
Answer.
Correct.
The cause is the question.
No. The cause is the answer. The answer wants to be revealed. What is the vessel to hold that revelation? It's the question. What is the vessel to hold that revelation? It is the answer, the question. The question is the vessel that holds the revelation of the light of the answer that wants to be revealed.
Okay, to be confused.
The answer is behind the curtain, right? I mean, the veil.
The answer is behind the curtain, but it's bringing the, moving the strings of the puppet. Does that metaphor work?
It works. Only because I just touched the material yesterday when I was reading the Kabbalah book.
Okay. You guys are sitting on a futon.
Bob, yes, sir.
Bob, I assume Bob bought the futon.
He fell asleep for it, yeah.
Well, he bought the futon whenever he bought the futon. Bob, do you think you bought the futon or the futon bought you?
Oh, that's a really good question. I have an answer that's equally perplexing. I think the futon and I rearranged to meet in the futon store.
That is correct.
In order for us to be here right now.
There is a light, a fulfillment. The futon has a desire to fulfill, a desire to give pleasure to you by being in your possession, by allowing you to have people sit on it and sleep on it and so forth. That is the purpose of the futon. That's why it was built, why it was created.
When objects do have desires to?
I'm sorry?
Objects do have desires to?
Understand, a desire means a consciousness. The answer is yes. Every atom and subatomic component has a consciousness, which means it has a desire. The desire of a table is to be of service to the human being. The desire of a couch is to give comfort and pleasure to the human being. Tired of
question.
Go ahead.
Question. So you're talking about what a lot of people refer to as inanimate objects, but we understand that every object has a soul, and it probably has dimensions of souls, right? A hierarchy of souls.
Correct.
As the human being, the human body has a hierarchy of souls.
Correct.
That make up the 613 components, right?
Right.
So are you suggesting that it is good and right for us to acknowledge the soul in our table and our chair and to thank it for being with us and pay it homage and respect and all of that?
How wouldn't you call that idol worship?
I would just call it acknowledging the soul and thanking it for being there.
Let's understand that we're going to stop using the word soul and call it consciousness.
Okay.
The inner essence of the item is consciousness. When the wood maker produced the table, the cabinet maker, the wood maker, Every person that went through that process injected a consciousness into the production of the table. The table has a desire, a consciousness to give pleasure to a human being. Which human being? Do you think the cabinet maker, the wood maker, knew which human being was going to purchase it at the store? 400 years ago, when you made a table, the guy made the table, he knew who his customer was. And he injected the consciousness of that into the table. Today, it's mass-produced, and we don't have that direct connection. But doesn't mean that the creator and the system, the universe, doesn't know where the light of fulfillment for this particular table comes to. You walked into the furniture store and you bought the futon. Why didn't you buy the other futon?
Because this one felt right.
Because this one spoke to you. This one, the light that wanted to be revealed, bought you. You didn't buy it.
I can acknowledge that it feels that way.
Okay. This is part of breaking through the klipot, breaking through those limitations of how we perceive the world. We all have them. We all have these limitations of how we perceive the world. I will repeat over and over, nothing happens in the physical world without a spiritual cause. And yet, I also continually perceiving the world physically. But that's not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal, why are we supposed to search for cause and effect? Because if I don't see true cause, I'm going to be continuously limited to my senses. I have to start to search to reach past those senses, beyond those senses, to the other 9 levels of senses that are spiritual, that we all have.
9 levels?
We have a total of 15 senses, 9 of which deal with the spiritual world. And we don't deal with them. We're disconnected from them until we start to exercise them. And that's what a psychic ability is. It's an exercise of one of those 9 senses. 10 senses. We have 5 senses that we know about. We have a 6th sense that we speak about. Some people have, some people don't. And that 6th sense is actually a total of 10. Individual senses.
Yeah, that's because, are you referring to extended psychic, extended visual, extended hearing, and extended smelling?
Touch?
I'm under the impression that the 5 senses all have extended ranges that are, they're woo-woo, and we could roll up into the psychic ball. Is that what you mean? 2 times 5 is 10?
Yeah, no, I understand what you mean. No, it's not what I'm saying. There's a total of 15. There's 5, and what you refer to as the extended senses is just you're extending your physical connections. They're not spiritual senses at all.
Okay. Like,
when you talk about extended sight, that's not a spiritual sense. There is a spiritual sense called sight, but it's not an extended extension of your physical.
So when I told you that I saw a physical manifestation of a spirit, remember the black orb that I told you I saw?
Yes.
I literally saw that in my human eyes. And it was revealed to me by God as a result of 6 months of directed prayer on one question alone. My question was to see what work was being done in the name of God, and he showed it to me. But that exact manifestation that I saw with my human eyes was spirit energy, correct?
Yes.
And is that one of the five, or how does that, is that my is that an extension of my base, my vision?
It's an extension of your physical vision. I've said to you there are 15 senses.
Right.
We don't know them. We only know five.
Correct.
And the extensions.
Five plus five is 10.
No.
Just extensions. They are not the senses. They are the extensions.
There are 15 senses. But every time we talk about a separation between senses, we are not really talking about cause and effect. When we see, can you see voices and hear pictures? Evaristo is shaking his head.
No, I say no, I cannot, well, I don't know, maybe I do and I haven't paid attention to it.
There's a disease, a psychological disease, where people hear sounds and see colors. The alternative, they will see pictures and hear notes. It's called a disease, but it's actually a unification of the senses. So we say there are 15 senses, and we know about five of them physically. And Bob is talking about the extension of those, but it's the all 15 are really a unity of one, which is how we perceive the world around us. Stop limiting yourself. And every time you see separation, you are not seeing the Creator. The Creator is always unified.
Just for helping guide my small pea brain, could you explain, describe the other five? I'm sorry.
The answer is yes, I could give you the names of them, but it wouldn't help.
You never know.
Yes,
give them to Evaristo then.
If I gave it to him with the promise that he wouldn't give it to you, what benefit is it?
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, Evaristo.
No, you give it to him. I don't have him.
The truth is, I just recently read about the 15 senses, and I looked at briefly what the names of the senses were. And they were physical words like sight and sound applied on a spiritual level. I haven't absorbed it myself, so I'm not on a level yet to teach it to you. But you do need to have this for where you are right now in understanding. Our sight is capable of seeing infrared. We don't. Our eyes can see infrared. We don't interpret infrared. There's a blockage there. How do I remove that blockage? That's extended sight. That's what you're referring to. Well, we are calling it, because it's now in a frame of spiritual energy, it's extended sight into the spiritual frame. No, it's still extended sight. The fact that I know about infrared light waves now and ultraviolet light waves now, that knowledge says, okay, I need to expand my physical sight to include these things. But there's a separate level of sight for spiritual things. a separate sense that can sense spiritual energies at different levels of consciousness. Have I confused you more?
No, no. No. The question is, it's hard to ask the question. Okay, now, which part of me is the one that needs to develop to have these senses, this unified sense?
Why should there be any part? How about all of you?
Well, I mean, Ruby gets upset because I am limiting myself. I asked you a question earlier, how would you tell a blind man the difference between yellow and blue? Now, picture the blind man, me. I don't know the difference between blue and yellow because I am blind, and I am trying to see a picture between what is spiritual and what is physical and how to cross over.
What you just said is, when you separate yourself from the Creator, basically, when you limit yourself, you're separating yourself from the Creator.
How I am limiting myself? I don't know. Sometimes I am accused and I go, huh? Okay, now I want to see. I want to see what you guys see, and I can't.
Listen. The only reason you are not able to sense psychic energy right now is that your level of consciousness is limited. Your unconscious senses psychic spiritual energy. How do you expand your consciousness to include that level of unconscious as part of your conscious?
Right.
It's called restriction. Every time you look at yourself, every time you do restriction, and you evaluate, the reason that I'm doing this reaction is because I feel a lack, and I'm trying to fulfill that lack in this wrong way. And you take that knowledge and say, this wrong way is that I'm going to throw it away. You have expanded your conscious level to include some aspect of your unconscious. And when you do that, you will eventually arrive at a level where your ability to sense these psychic spiritual energies will be available to you through expanded consciousness. When someone takes LSD, the barriers are broken down, and they see colors that can't be in the physical world, and they hear sounds and all of these other wonderful things that they, when they come back and try and describe. It's not a positive path because they're trying to do a shortcut. The way you want to achieve psychic spiritual sensory perception, expand your consciousness through restriction. Go back to the four steps. Do it at every step, every decision you made today. When you reached into the drawer to get your underwear, why did you get your underwear? Why did you take it from the top and not the bottom?
Throw it away and go naked on it, right? No?
Exactly.
It's a job.
Exactly, throw it away. Understand why you do what you do as opposed to being a robot doing what you do.
It's a routine. We do things by a routine.
Yes?
So the Sephiroth are 10 different stages of restriction, correct?
Yes, there are 10 different stages of consciousness.
Actually 11, right?
No, there's only 10. and there's only one. It looks like 10, but there's really only one. And that's the understanding. We see 10. There's the infinite light of the Keter, and there's the physical light of the Malchut. There looks like 10, but there's one. Is there any separation between the physical world and the infinite light? From the perception of the light, is there any limitation? Is there any separation between the light and the vessel? The physical world, from the perception of the light.
From the light's view, there is no...
There is no difference.
Right, but from the physical world...
From the vessel's view, there's clearly a separation.
Right.
Why are we still striving to see things as separate? We need to strive to see things as unified.
Right, and see how the ten different stages...
That gets us closer to the consciousness of the light. 5 fingers or one hand, which is it?
Both.
One hand.
5 fingers.
Both. It's the one. All-inclusive description.
That's
the lesson
for tonight. That's exactly the lesson for tonight. She sees it as one hand. He saw it as 5 fingers. You see it as both. And all three of you are incorrect from the standpoint of the light. It's vessels that he created that he loves. It's not 5 fingers, it's 5 billion atoms that have a consciousness to be part of Hanoch's hand. Cause and effect. Expand your minds past the limitation of physicality. And past the limitations of psychic, spiritual perceptions. Become the light. Become the fulfillment.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't
want to
ask questions. I guess.
Don't be bashful. It's for entertainment value.
I have one quick question. You had mentioned how when we eat animals, we lower our consciousness, correct or not? Right?
Essentially, we lower our consciousness because we take in the lower consciousness of the animal into ourselves.
Okay. So
it's not going to elevate our consciousness. It has to lower it.
And how does that apply, for example, being around animals that have a lower consciousness than us? Does that affect us by being around lower
consciousness? Like I have a dog. It's about to be next to my dog.
Let me change it from the dog to a cat. One of the sages says, don't ever look the cat in the eye. He's going to steal your memory.
Oreos?
Yeah. That's what he writes. As soon as I read that, my daughter went out and bought a cat.
And the cat became smart.
It took 8 years to get her to give up the cat. And now that she gets separated from her husband, you know, and got divorced, she's got cats again. And now I have to worry about it with my granddaughter. So... yes, it's for real. But there's free choice in the world. So if you look at cats versus dogs, you know the cat is a more selfish animal than a dog. A dog has an animal that has a love.
Very loyal.
The essence of the dog is about emotion and love. The essence
and service.
Of the cat is selfishness and service, yes. Now, what does that mean? Should you have a dog around you? I don't own a dog. I never have, except for about 6 months when I was a teenager. Why don't I own a dog? Well, I'm a very selfish person, and I don't want to go for the walk. I'd be a lot healthier if I'd been taking dogs for walks for 20 years. Which is the way you want to perceive the world? There's a reason why dogs were created by the Creator in this world. There were a reason why men bred dogs to become what they've become.
So, for example...
Go ahead.
No, turning that whole thing around by being around lower consciousness, does the same apply when you're around people that have higher consciousness than you? Does that rub, like...
You're
does
bringing
that
down.
Cause your consciousness to elevate or not?
Absolutely.
Well, tell me somebody who has a higher consciousness than you. And we'll move me out of the question because I don't have a higher consciousness than you.
But I don't know.
But you won't believe that because I give you information. So let's just leave that aspect. Name somebody who has a higher consciousness than you. When you were 5 years old, your father had a higher consciousness than you. And you stood around him and you grew to be...
Payback.
Yeah.
What does it become? Now, does your father have a higher consciousness than you? You respect his knowledge. He has more earth experience. He has more life experience. So you respect his knowledge and that you respect that experience. But is that higher consciousness or is that experience?
Good question, Sana. She's not going to answer you in front of me.
Sister, what was the, who's the nun in India who's such a sadhaka? I forget her name. She passed away a few years ago.
Mother Teresa?
Does Mother Teresa have a higher consciousness than you?
I never knew her. I'm assuming that.
I think the answer is yes.
And I'll say to you that what she has is a greater desire to be of service to people. Is that the definition of a higher consciousness?
If she's at a level of higher consciousness where that's valuable, yes. She sees the value in it.
Yeah. So now we're bringing a whole different definition into the process. And that's what the purpose of why I was asking the questions. Yes, if you're around higher consciousness people, they're going to help elevate your consciousness. If you're around lower consciousness people, they're going to help to lower your consciousness.
But wait a minute.
The assumption is that a biker gang has a lower level of consciousness because they're all they're interested in is personal pleasures. Beating up people is a personal pleasure. Rape, God forbid, is a personal pleasure, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So general understanding would be a biker gang is not a poor place to be around. It's going to draw you to a lower level of consciousness.
But, hello?
Yes.
I had a dog who I'm sure was trying to connect with me at the psychic level.
Right.
Maybe the soul level. And I think she's dead now, but my relationship with that dog was, you would say, we would all agree that the dog was at a lower level of consciousness intellectually. But I know that the dog was trying to communicate with me through her eyes. There was just so much energy coming between us.
Right.
And because I knew that, and it was my dog, and I trained her, And because I had such a great relationship with that dog, and I know that her biggest desire was to serve me, and I recognized that, it helped me to provide a storyline, a focus, a context for my own spiritual growth. Because I appreciated that, and it gave me a God view, a higher view of a soul. And it helped me to appreciate what qualities are in a lower soul, a lower form of intelligence. And so that's an example where my dog helped me to aspire spiritually. And I love my dog for just being the simple servant and faithful servant that she was. And so,
unconditional.
I'm not saying that every dog can be that way. Yeah, that's unconditional love is part of it. Unconditional was definitely there. So I would offer that as
my dog for that.
An example of how a lower life form is beneficial for you. But I can't say the same thing for every type of pet.
You wouldn't say that for a pit bull, would you?
Well, I wouldn't probably ever have a pit bull.
No, of course not. But would you, you know, do you know people, and I know people, or I've heard of people who have pit bulls for their 5-year-old kid?
Yeah, but you know what, you said it before. You hinted at why mankind has bred animals.
Because
they're building the vessel, right?
Yes. Yes. And you're building it in the technology today because they play with gene splicing in plants. And now all our tomatoes and all our corn and all of these various vegetables are no longer pure strains. They've all been incorporated with gene manipulation by man. It's no longer the pure thing.
Yeah, that's why non-GMO is so viable, right?
Yes.
So, regarding that topic, you told me about this dog that lives in Australia that's connected to the earth. And I told my friends, yet I couldn't back it up.
Yeah, I know.
So if you do...
I'll look for it on the internet, see if I can find it, where the source is. Yeah. I know it's there.
They think I'm crazy now.
Okay, I'll look for it.
It looks like, okay, that's fine.
But it's good for your friends to think you're crazy. It lowers your ego. It helps your ego to deal with itself.
Yeah.
I bounce around the lowest parts of my...
I'm doing this as part of my correction.
Well,
jealous of my ego.
I think we're done with questions for the night.
Yeah. I'm kind of tired today.
Not really.
Not really, because
I'll speak tomorrow at 1, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Have a beautiful week. We'll speak to you all next Monday.